The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The official mainstream historical narratives also often overlook the contributions of African Americans, but a recent documentary film, A Walk on the River, a history of the Alamo City Chronicles, San Antonio's robust Black history through interviews with historians, activists, and private citizens. On this Juneteenth, we want to reflect on San Antonio's Black history and also open up the phone lines to hear the history that's been passed down to you. Listeners, call in. We want to hear what you remember of San Antonio. What stories have you been told by your family? A lot of history is shared over the kitchen table, and we want to be able to share that with the greater San Antonio this afternoon. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. And we're going to listen to a clip from the documentary film, A Walk on the River, Black History of the Alamo City.
Mac W. Thomas. 96 years old. I was born in San Antonio, Texas, 1921. And I was born on Lay Street in the Baptist settlement.
One of the areas that emancipated blacks settled was the Baptist settlement. It gained its name because of the formation of so many Baptist churches in the area. The Baptist Settlement District was approximately 10 square blocks made up mostly of homes called shotgun houses. New Light Free Mission Baptist Church was established in 1870, Mount Zion First Baptist Church in 1871, and Macedonia Baptist Church in 1879. It was renamed Second Baptist Church in October 1890.
There's one other site where African Americans lived in this downtown area. That was the Baptist settlement. And Baptist settlement was demolished so that the low-income housing for Anglos could be built there.
In which I explained that that was the original home of freed black slaves that formed Mount Zion First Baptist Church, but it was also the eastern side of the river where blacks were originally told to go.
In the early 1800s, Felipe Alua, an African Louisiana Creole, purchased farmland and houses near downtown, which would later become known as Ellis Alley, the cradle of East Side culture. After the end of the Civil War, Ellis Alley became one of the first African American settlement areas in San Antonio.
My grandmother, Nettie, her mother, Isabella, the slave, emancipated slave, walked the Pinto Trail from Fredericksburg to San Antonio, eventually married a guy who had a horse and a wagon. When they were able to buy some property, they bought property in Ellis Alley. And because my great-grandmother and great-grandfather began our family as we know it right there in Ellis Alley. I was determined to make it a historic enclave and was successful in doing so.
That's a clip from the documentary film, A Walk on the River, A Black History of the Alamo City. And we have with us this afternoon the director and co-producer, Logic Ala. Logic, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is another producer of the Walk on the River, a Black History of Alamo City, and that is Andar Ma'at. Andar,
yes,
welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
And D.L. Grant is here. He's the manager of the George Washington Carver Branch Library. And is that you narrating?
I get that a lot, but no.
Okay. All right. But you have a similar deep gravitas voice. So thanks, and the phone number again is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980 to call in to share your history or reaction to watching this documentary. Logic Ala, can you talk about the genesis of this documentary?
This documentary started from a conversation that Andar and I had in front of the Carver Cultural Center. And it really was just us speaking about how much history lies right there on that corner. And it kind of blossomed and bloomed into us just tossing around the ideas of creating a film. And at first, we first talked about a tour. So eventually, the film idea won over, and we just really started going out, seeking people to interview, conducting interviews, mostly at the Carver Library. And it just really took on from there. And then we went into a crowdfunding phase. We created a 30-minute preview, and it really just grew. And as we got to the summer of 2018, we started editing what we had. And then we premiered it in August of 2018 at the Carver Cultural Center. And it's been rave reviews and a great hit ever since then.
Andar, as you began the project, did you understand, have a full understanding of the depth of what you would be working with? Was it uncovered as you went along?
It's really just kind of uncovered as we went along. You know, Brother Logic and I both are very much into history and understand the great importance of history. So initially when we started off on the project, we thought it may take 3 or 4 months and we'll be finished with it and move on to something else. But as we really got more in depth and we interviewed some of the teachers, the scholars, the elders, some of the historians of the community, we realized this story was much deeper. And really we could not tell it all in just one film. So we ended up with so much information, we probably could have given a documentary covering over 12 hours, and there's still much more to be uncovered. But what we found that it's a rich cultural history here in San Antonio concerning the African-American community, and I think we're just really, and Walk on the River, is really just touching the surface and kind of just introducing people to just that information, but it's a lot more to be uncovered.
And D.L. Grant, you're the manager of the George Washington Carver Branch Library. You're featured in the documentary telling stories about history of San Antonio. Why do you think it's important that we have this documentary film and we're able to share it?
It's uncovering the African-American footprint in San Antonio in a way that we, a lot of us, have not thought of it. I'm just blessed that my career at Carver Branch Library, I was taught by elders in the community who shared their history. I have become something of a researcher, but that all started because of them. So shout out to those people that helped educate me. My family talked about family history, but we did not talk about the African-American footprint and how broad it was. We just didn't talk about that. My family, they were from other places and within the state, but I'm just so happy and blessed that I had this opportunity to help uncover what we call the African-American footprint in the city.
San Antonio African-American population is about 7% of the overall population. It's actually going down with the growth of the city. We're not doing a very good job of attracting more African-Americans to come to San Antonio. And is that a problem? Should that be addressed? Should we be talking about that, D.L. Grant?
It's very interesting that you bring that up, because we do find that there are more opportunities for us. So that kind of would seem like a way that we might fan out across South Texas. I mean, there are people that I attended high school with who moved in areas where we were not thought to be. They're settling New Braunfels area, other parts of surrounding South Texas, the surrounding counties. And, well, that was just not something that I grew up knowing for us to live, but there are more opportunities for us, and people are taking advantage of that. What I do hope is that people will retain that place in their hearts that the Carver community, indeed the Eastside community, is still a place where you can turn to indulge your cultural heritage, because we really want to hold on to that. Because as people move, that could start to get a little bit lost, but we're working very hard to maintain that cultural heritage.
All right, we're taking a break. We'll be coming right back. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about Black history of San Antonio. We really want to hear the stories that you might have. Call in 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about A Walk on the River, Black History of the Alamo City on this Juneteenth. It's a documentary film that tells a story, and it goes straight to many of the sources here that we still have, talking to the elders in San Antonio about what they remember growing up here, and goes to the archives, goes through the documents that we have that exist, but there's still so much that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we really want to mine the community to find out, what did you hear? What did your grandparents tell you? What's been passed down to you over the kitchen table about where your family came from and how y'all did in San Antonio over the years? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Kathy is on the line. And Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Okay, we're not being able to hear her, but I believe I'm told by the producer that she wants to know about Juneteenth events that could be happening today. So, Andar Ma'at, you're the producer of Walk on the River. Can you tell us, do you know anything about Juneteenth events today?
Yes, sir. Of course, actually, I just left a Juneteenth event to come over here. They're taking place today at Second Baptist Church. Of course, you know, June 19th is the official day of celebration for Juneteenth. And today, Mr. Oscar Vix, who is one of the people that we interviewed in the film, he is coordinating an event today. They have, I think they have some of the political officials there, from the state representative, the mayor, and so forth. They have praise dancers, choirs, drummers, and they have a number of vendors there, you know, with wares and products, and also people sharing information. So right today, it's a great celebration taking place, and definitely invite people to go over to Second Baptist Church and participate in the Juneteenth celebration there.
So Juneteenth is the celebration of the arrival of information to Texas that slavery was officially ended in the old Confederacy. So it shows you how clumsy and complex it is. Just because slavery was ended doesn't mean people are free. People have got to sort of realize it's complicated. You're no longer a slave, but that doesn't mean you're free, because there's all these other things going on simultaneously. How do we get to free? That's a different story. Mm-hmm. But it's all about the information. And there was this massive attempt to prevent the flow of information to slaves and Black Americans to know how to read, how the world operated, how to handle money, how to do things. So the withholding of information is a big part of Black history. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like what you're doing, Logic Allah, I really want to hear from you on this, with your documentary, is that you're trying to break down those old barriers of withholding of information, and you were trying to share the information that belongs to the people and giving it back to them.
Absolutely. I think that's really key. The information, the history, it belongs to the people. People need to be informed. Information and knowledge is the foundation of all things. So in order for you to move forward, in order for you to truly strive for freedom, you must have the information. And this history, it was readily available, but it was not in one particular place. And we felt like a film, a movie in today's day and time, where people are so used to video, would be able to educate people on a broader scope or a broader scale than maybe a book or just a blog. So we really felt like one of the best ways that we could really disseminate this information would be in an audio visual form where people could see it.
And D.L. Grant, we were at the Carver Branch Library. Even if people do go researching for this, it's not an easy thing to do. As easy as you try to make it for them, the resources are limited. And when you go to the original source documents, even going back into the 1970s, there wasn't a whole lot of telling of the story in official newspapers and things.
Well, that's true. We've made some advances. I'm very proud to be a librarian, because one thing that we all understand as information professionals, we are all about information and making sure that the public have access to things that they care about. So we've had to be on our game to make sure that we cull all this information and have it where people can get it. So you have people uncovering information about San Antonio's history. You got a Dr. Bruce Glassroot, who's written a number of books about what the African American has accomplished over the years. Even San Antonio, I'm looking at the article Hidden History, that was written by Nicholas Fuqua and Edna Gravenhorst. They talk about the hidden history of slavery in San Antonio. And in one part in in their article, they talk about how slaves were sold in downtown San Antonio. So you're walking past the old Josky's building, and that was an auction block of some sorts. So there's so much that we can do to you can even visit our Texana Genealogy Department down at San Antonio Public Library, the central central location, and you could learn more from our very articulate and brilliant staff there.
There's a photograph of the Alamo taken in 1861, and that Alamo next to the chapel that everyone is familiar with, there is a sign that says that there's a slave auction being held there at the time. So at this cradle of Texas liberty, on the sacred grounds, that was the site of a slave auction. And so people, I think, deserve to know that. Also, today is Juneteenth, June 19th, but it's interesting, like, on this day in 1954, there was this action of where African-American youth went to Woodlawn Lake Pool, which was a public pool at the time, but was whites only, and they jumped in, and they challenged this Jim Crow rule that we had in San Antonio and forced the shutting down of all the pools in the city, and then made the city council adopt an ordinance segregating all the pools. You know, they went and made it official. And then it led to a court case with the NAACP and Reverend Claude Black leading the way, a federal challenge to that, and made the city back down. So it was on this day, 1954, that this historic act took place, and people in San Antonio need to know these things. It empowers you to know these things. I mean, Ondari, your reaction?
You know, I think in our film, what we are really striving to do is to highlight those acts of discrimination and segregation and racism, but also to really give emphasis to those in the African-American community that's, you know, stepped out on a sense of self-determination and creativity to bring about change. So when we looked into the San Antonio community here, blacks are building institutions, they are building, creating programs, they are establishing strong communities and families. And what we wanted to share was, in spite of the many challenges that we face, we have always continued to strive for excellence and achievements. So when we look through the history, we're looking at people who are like Miss Maddie Landry, for example, out of St. Paul United Methodist Church, which is the oldest black church here in San Antonio. She established the Camp Founders Girls because at that time they would not permit her to have a chapter or have black girls be in the Camp Fire Girls. So now you see.
I have a clip that I want to play for that. Go ahead.
The Camp Founder Girls. It was a camp for young girls. A lot of people may not have heard about that, but back during those days of segregation, young black girls couldn't join Camp Fire Girls.
Due to discriminatory practices in the 20s, young black girls were unable to join Camp Fire Girls, nor were charters being granted. Therefore, in 1924, Mrs. Maddie Landry founded and organized Camp Founder Girls in San Antonio at St. Paul Methodist Church.
I remember the many days that we had fundraisers with Maddie Landry, who always worked hard.
The Camp Founders Girls, for providing a place for young girls and women to learn the kinds of life skills and teamwork skills.
We were able to stay in cabin-type dwellings, but they did have campfire experiences.
But she had land in Burney, and every summer you could go to camp in Burney.
So that's just you bring up that example, and it's very rich.
Yes, and I think it's numerous examples like that. I mean, you look at someone like Miss Ella Austin, at a time where there was no orphanage for black children, she established an orphanage. And you can go down a list of people, but the thing I think that really comes through in the film is that, once again, in spite of the many challenges that we faced as a people here in San Antonio, we continue to strive to create those programs and institutions, which then became a central part of the development of San Antonio and contributed to the diversity of San Antonio. So I think as we uncover this history, these kind of stories are inspiring people, because just to follow up on that last thing is even recently, we received a notice of an article of someone that saw the film, and they saw that aspect of Miss Maddie Landry. Now they have resurrected that program, and they are offering a program for young African-American girls and girls in the community to have a camping experience and have that similar experience that those ladies at that time had.
So we heard earlier a little bit about the Baptist settlement and Ellis Island, Ellis Alley. Mm-hmm. And so, Logic Ala, can you talk a little bit more about that and why we need to remember about these places?
Indeed. Well, you know, coming out of slavery, land ownership seemed very far-fetched for people who had been held in bondage and treated as property for years. So it was hard for Blacks coming out of slavery to find places to live. So Ellis Alley and the Baptist Settlement were very instrumental in helping Black Americans have a place where they could settle and start to establish themselves, establish their families, establish churches and learning institutions so that we could move forward as a people. Everyone needs a foundation. And those places, Ellis Alley and also the Baptist Settlement, were some of the first places where African Americans were allowed to purchase land, set up homes, and build communities.
And those places became, the launching pads for families. We've got multi-generational families here in San Antonio, people who have been here since the very beginning, their family lines, and it helps them to know where they came from. D.L. Grant, do you have people coming to your library trying to do research about where my family came from?
Absolutely. It's a blessing. You hear this, this thing all the time. People want to uncover their roots. And I'm just so happy that San Antonio Public Library does retain resources that help us to do our job. We know that sometimes we have to look beyond what we have and uncover more information so that we could share it. I look at my involvement also with the San Antonio African American Community Archive, SACAM, Carver Branch, where I work. We maintain a local history collection, so we are doing our due diligence to make sure that we get that story out to people. Because of research that we're finding, and you got researchers like Everett Fly who are on their game out there helping uncover this information.
Sure, he's out there looking about these Black settlements that were around.
Exactly. I was just going to say, that speaks to your point about the long generations. What just baffles me is that some African Americans are walking around this town and they have no access, no concept that their ancestors were here maybe from the very beginning, before 1718. I mean, they have no concept of that.
Yeah, people aren't aware that there was a underground railroad that ran through San Antonio so that escaped slaves could get to Mexico, that right on the other side of the Rio Grande, there was a rich communities of escaped slaves who were living with Mexican citizens and with Native people in harmony, working together. And that at one time, the people here in San Antonio, they got together and they tried to attack that settlement to bring back the escaped slaves. And they got their hats handed to them. They got their plows cleaned, as you say, because the Native people and the Mexican forces and the slaves trained up and they says, "You're not getting here." And it was a big thing. So there's a lot of history, a lot of drama, a lot of amazing characters who deserve to be remembered. They shouldn't just be allowed to be forgotten. This is great acts of bravery. So our phone lines are open. We certainly want to hear from you. If you got stories to tell about San Antonio Black history, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health. The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need. Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You made your own community. You made your own world. And it was thriving. We had Black businesses like you would not believe. Our funeral homes, cab services, hotels, Black people did it all. it was not just one experience here in San Antonio. We did everything. And we weren't just on the east side either. You know that there were African Americans living on the west side as well. So if you're really going to look at San Antonio and the African American here in this community, you can't just look one place.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. That's a clip from the documentary film, A Walk on the River, A Black History of the Alamo City. We invite you to call in with your questions, comments. If you've got stories to tell, something that your grandmother told you about and, you know, you think everyone should know about it, it was about your family, but it's not just about your family. This is San Antonio history. And the more we share, the thing about information is the more you share, the more valuable it becomes. We need to share all of this because it is so rich, and it definitely informs us. And no one's trying to talk about how awful white people are. You know, that's not what this is about, okay? This is, bad things happened in history, but it's about overcoming these things to get to where we are today. Logic Allah, am I doing that wrong?
No, you're right on track. You know, this is about the foundation of a people's information, and it's a recurrent theme in this conversation. You have to know. You have to have a sense of self, and a sense of self helps you move forward. And we know history is a foundational piece to a person's identity. And for us to understand who we are, especially right here in San Antonio, we must know this history. It's very important. It also acts as a blueprint for how we can overcome things that we see and that we face today. So if we can see what has happened in our past, if we understand what we have overcome, we know how we can move forward and overcome obstacles and things that are in our path today in order to reach our true genesis and be who we are truly meant to be.
Because when we teach history, we're teaching character. We're showing that, hey, if you have an ancestor who was a slave, and they somehow managed to find the money to buy the land, to start the family, and provide some stability, that took a lot of strength. And if you figure, wow, if my ancestor can do that, I've got those same genes, I've got that same blood flowing through me, I can do so much as well, And let's not listen to somebody else's story about me and my family, because no one knows my story like myself. And their story about me is not the one that's going to reflect on me. I mean, D.L. Grant, can you add to that?
Again, local history is what we're trying to maintain. We have sat down and conducted countless interviews with elders in the community who tell their story, and nobody can tell the story like they can. So as they leave the scene, those stories are preserved. We have these discussions. Oftentimes we have programs that celebrate the culture that we've had. And again, in line with where this whole conversation is going, I'm so happy Juneteenth is here and we're able to have this dialogue. We can have it all the time, but today is a really good venue. But it is a time where you could look back at your history and connect to what your ancestors accomplished, because that is a sense of pride. It's a legacy you want to live up to, just like you just said. I mean, I would stand, a few inches taller, uncovering things about my family that were positive in times where the odds were stacked insurmountably against you.
All right, I'm going to go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Barbara, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Barbara. Go ahead. Okay, it seems like we have a technical issue. And so it looks like what Barbara's asking, though, is about tours that are available to tell San Antonio's African-American history. And I know there's a bus tour that's available. Yes. And so Andar Ma'at, can you tell me about that?
Yes, sir. You know, as people have come out to see the film, they're walking away with questions. And one of the questions is, where are the places that you talked about? Where can we go find this information, or find at least the location and look at the place and talk about and see some of the markers? Anyway, what Brother Logic and myself have done, because initially we started off on this path of talking about doing a tour, but right now we have actually established what we call the Freedom Black History Bus Tour. We initially had the first run of the tour in January, during Dream Week, and we've been running about once a month now.
One coming up like next week?
Yes, actually, matter of fact, we have one coming up on June the 29th. We have two runs at 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock. We have 18 locations we've identified, mainly on the east side of San Antonio, where we get on this nice, comfortable 56-passenger bus, and we travel to these locations and we share the history. And we have a few stops that we actually get off. One stop we get off on down in Ellis Alley area that we have spoken of earlier. But it's a beautiful opportunity for people to go back and look at history. And just a very interesting thing happened on one of the tours. Elder woman who had actually graduated from Phyllis Wheatley, and she stood up on the bus and sung the whole alma mater, and she was so emotional and so taken by the fact that she was on this tour and this was her in like reliving history. And then for those who are new to San Antonio, this is an excellent way for them to kind of get familiar with the east side of San Antonio and the Black history of it.
So the east side of San Antonio has seen a lot of change right now. It's become a hot market, a lot of gentrification going on. And number one, we have to identify what pieces of property are important to telling San Antonio history, because if not, they're going to be bulldozed.
Yes.
You know, and right now with the Sutton Building, that seems like that's what's going to be happening. You know, that's on a list that was on a buildings that in the last legislative session that the state of Texas is going to sell, and that's probably going to become condominiums or something or other. Logic a la... Are we doing a good job of documenting and talking about what history needs to be preserved in San Antonio's east side?
We could definitely do a better job. There are so many historical places that don't have markers. We know that there are historical markers on the east side. However, there are so many buildings that represent just a past that is not always celebrated. So we definitely need to do a better job, in my opinion. There's so many unofficial, I think about C.A. Whittier, who held a clinic or who had a home, and out of his home he ran a clinic. I mean, there are so many places that deserve recognition, and these are the things that we try to do on the tours, just show people some of these historical locations, even if they don't have an official marker. I think we could definitely be doing a better job, though.
And D.L. Grant with the Washington George Washington Carver Branch Library, your facility, I've gone there and I've seen it's just like it is used. Your library has a lot of traffic coming through there, people working it. They're using the resources. It just shows you that how important it is that we have these facilities available. But, you know, having the original George Washington Carver Branch Library was an act of was willed into being by the San Antonio Black community.
You're absolutely right. That started, San Antonio Public Library was founded in the early 1900s. That was a battle to get African Americans a facility they could use, something of substance. That went on almost more than 20 years, and finally resulted in the colored branch that was established in, 1930. So, yeah, the history goes way back. And we try to preserve that history. We don't want to forget. Indeed, if you go to the Carver Theater today, you look on the side of the building, and that old name is etched there, the colored branch of San Antonio Public Library. So it's not you're hanging on to hate, but you don't want to forget where you've been. And what Carver tries to do, again, is really hone in on the local history, telling those stories, preserving them. One of the resources that I can boast is that we house Dr. Charles Hunt's doctoral dissertation, which researches African American business in San Antonio. And that's why I was able to speak so I don't want to say eloquently, but speak so
authoritatively
because of the research that was there. And that is housed at San Antonio Public Library, indeed the Carver Carver Branch Library. And it's there are other sources that people can come to us and enjoy. But that's how I knew about the cab services that we had, the hotels that we ran, his research. And there's so much more that we could share with people. Come visit us.
Right. So the San Antonio Register is a newspaper that is an incredible resource. When you look at the archive of this, it is the only the existing archive. That it was the San Antonio Register, but it covered the entire South. And there are historians that go through that paper. It was a Black history, African-American community newspaper run by Mr. Bellinger, who documented lynchings and other acts of discrimination throughout Texas and across the South, and is one of the most thorough records of, like right now, this is the century of the Red Summer. You know, it was 100 years yes. ago that, you know, we saw this wave of black lynching all across the South as a reaction to black soldiers coming back from World War I. And they were told they can't wear their uniforms in public. And if they did, they got lynched, you know. And we're talking like, who's talking about that today, 100 years later, you know, and you go through the archive of the San Antonio Register and it's all right there. So we have to not only have documentation, but we also have to have historians who go through that and then communicators who will tell that to the people. And Logic Allah, that's on you.
Yes, absolutely. It's our duty. I mean, we have to preserve our own story. The San Antonio Register was a great resource for us, and the archives are available online. Not only do you get the historical dates and facts, but you get the tone of how people felt about it, which really impressed me. You got a chance to see what people thought. You got a chance to hear an opinion. You got a chance to relive what is taking place in a way that was very human. And I think that we have to really value that. And I think that we do that in the film by trying to give a human touch to the history.
Yeah, particularly when the mainstream newspapers were ignoring these events that were happening all around them. And now we have the documentation so that we can say, yeah, this really happened. We've got the receipts. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. On this Juneteenth, we're talking about San Antonio Black history. Also, today in Washington, D.C., they're having hearings about reparations and what how that could happen, what form that could take, and why that what is the argument in favor of reparations? And I'm interested in hearing what some of our guests have to say about that. And so first, let me turn to Andar Ma'at. He's a producer of A Walk on the River, A Black History of the Alamo City.
Yes. Of course, I think this is an excellent time because you mentioned the summer of 1919, and which Red Summer, which a lot of lynchings and horrible things took place. But I think now is the time for us to have this discussion about repair. Reparations is really about justice. It's about repairing and healing the people who have been injured or been wronged. There is a thing that's in an old African tradition that says suruha, suruta, which means to repair and restore that which has been hurt and damaged. So reparations is a discussion that opens up a line of truth. And what we're hoping to do, you know, is that with the film is to show the truth of what African people have accomplished, but what we had to overcome. And I think now to have this discussion about H.R. 40, which actually has been sitting around Congress for many years because John Conyers initially submitted the bill, or at least had it presented. And it's just coming time where it's now being talked about. But I think for me, really, is that we must repair. And I'm saying repair, and part of our repair is learning our history, learning our truth, learning our culture, and then at the same time demanding that which has been taken, that which has been really damaged in ourselves, that we now ask America to look at this, to really acknowledge the wrongs and ask, what is justice? What does justice look like? I mean, that's a discussion within itself, because people can come in and say from, well, are you talking about money? Are you talking about education? Are you talking about some health benefits? It could be in numerous ways, but one of the first things that must take place is that we must have a discussion. But before you can have justice, you must have truth. So the film that we are presenting and have put together is to try to share information about the truth of what happened, because sometimes people can tell the story, but they don't tell the complete story, and that falls on the shoulders of those who have a commitment to telling the whole story and then healing a family, a people, and a community, and a nation.
And Logic Ala, a director and co-producer of A Walk on the River, can you talk about what are you hearing as Washington, D.C. is talking about reparations?
I think that it's important to speak about reparations. I think that in the past it has been a taboo topic because people feel a certain type of way. It is like it's bringing up a past that we often want to ignore or make it seem as if it is so far removed that it has no effect on the present. And I think that that's a problem. Everything has an effect on the present. All history, for those of us that study history, you can see the remnants of it today. When you look at our society, when you look at the disproportionate amount of Black males who are incarcerated in that system of prison, if you look at the education and how we are not educated properly about our history, if you look at how African Americans seem to continue to get the short end of the stick through societal racism, I think that we have to look at those things and we have to, as Baba Andar said, look at ways to repair. And I think a lot of people fear that that means just handing out checks. Money does not heal everything. However, you cannot move forward as a nation without having monetary gain. So I think that it's important for us to look at how we can repair our education system, how we can repair our prison system, how we can, even when I think about land ownership, how so much land had been taken away from Blacks, how communities had been burned. We have to look at how we can provide reparations to a people. Also, I think that we can't look at this as if it has not happened in the past. We know that the Native Americans have received some form of reparations. We know that in 1941, when the Japanese had been in internment camps, that they had received reparations or some form of repair. We know that there is a history of that in this country, so we cannot act as if African Americans who have been enslaved for hundreds of years are not deserving for at least a conversation about reparations.
But when we talk about reparations, can we look at this as a way to not just of writing checks and making something go away? I mean, that's not good. Okay, you can't make this go away, and it doesn't matter how big the check is, that's not going to happen. But if we think about this in a way of trying to do some healing, of course, that's still also very limited, but economic development and helping a portion of the population that has unfairly felt the worst part of some of the economic ills that our economy has delivered with redlining, job discrimination, forced into low-performing schools, University of Texas at Austin wasn't integrated until 1956. And even now, even today, it's less than 3% of the overall student population at UT Austin is below 3%. And you have to, how can that be the University of Texas if it doesn't look like Texas? What are we doing wrong? How do we fix that? And can reparations be used as a tool to try to bring a portion of the population back into the overall wellness of our entire economy? And so back to you, Andar Ma'at.
Most definitely. Because when you talk about repair and healing of a people, definitely you're not just talking about monetary, but you know, you're talking about looking at the damage that has taken place. And I think, first of all, the first step in anything is to know the truth. And that is to sit down and look at it. I'm talking about America needs to sit down and we need to have an honest, open dialogue of how racism still exists today. And then how to address the ills of racism today. And then how we move forward. I know we just mentioned the fact of healing.
Yes, I want to talk about trauma, you know.
Trauma It's very impactful because, I mean, I think they just came out with this thing, epigenetics.
Epigenetics.
And how trauma can very much influence your gene development in a way.
How your genes are expressed.
So when you think about that, you have to acknowledge the fact that as people of African descent here in San Antonio, in the world, in America, period, we have gone through a serious traumatic experience. And if we cannot be healed, then America cannot be healed. So the healing takes place, and that's why I'm stressing the fact that healing takes place first and foremost when you can sit down and tell the truth about what happened. As long as we continue to move around in the world looking ill but acting like we're healthy, it's confusing. And I think some of the things that you've talked about and Brother Logic has spoken of, just the ill effects of society and how it looks like it's problematic because, you know, during slavery, it was said that African people sometimes was cast as inhuman, heathens, savages, and so forth. Well, we know that's to be false. So now, can we tell the truth? Because if someone tells a falsehood and then builds a society based on falsehoods, the only way that can be changed is that you reveal the truth. And that's one of the things, like I'm going back, and I keep going back to the film, because one of the things I believe, honestly, is that we must heal. A part of the healing, first and foremost, begin with knowing ourselves, knowledge of self. And then once we heal ourselves, then we can reach out to a larger community and reach out to America and say, let's talk honestly and heal ourselves. Let's start talking about the truth of what happened, but then what can happen and should happen as we move forward.
And this is something that will build a stronger America, Logic Allah?
I definitely think so. If we look at our nation as a melting pot, and we often say that, we have to acknowledge every portion, every diaspora, every people, every nuance, every historical fact, every people that have contributed to make this nation what it is today. And we have to give credit where credit is due.
D.L. Grant, manager of the George Washington Carver Branch Library, you are a keeper of an important torch in San Antonio. You were talking about the importance of information, information flow, getting it into the hands of people who want to know, who am I, what's going on, where did I come from? And you see it every day at that library.
We do see that a lot. I mean, this whole conversation, again, is so exciting, because what I want you to do, coming from the information aspect of this, is we have the information that you need to help you to make up your mind about things. Some people don't have an opinion on this. Some Americans think that they've already apologized enough. Some people don't think they have enough knowledge to make have an honest opinion about, well, you know, what is this whole reparation thing about. But
we couldn't even have this conversation on the radio.
True.
Now, that is a very good step forward. But now that you do have this forum where you can have this dialogue, you want to know what you're talking about. And so what we want to do is make sure that we have the resources available so you can make a decision.
So fact-based, evidence-driven.
Absolutely. And we and see, that is just so important, because so many things are happening. I mean, people are concerned a lot about issues of gentrification, displacement, all these things. These are other things that are going on in the community that people need to be discussing as well. Because, I mean, look at one of the hottest spots, Denver Heights. So much African-American history happened in the Denver Heights. I was there every weekend in the late 1960s when I was a kid. And It hurts you that some of these things are going away, and that.
Right.
But the culture, we need to make sure the cultural heritage is there and it's maintained.
So we don't want the African American communities that we have today go the way of Baptist Settlement and Ellis Alley.
Absolutely.
Where they were, you know, moved out of the way.
And that
so when people showed up and they had the money and they wanted the land, they were able to get it. But, you know, what are we going to do today? How do we identify what's important to us? How do we reach out to our policymakers and lawmakers and our politicians and protect what's important to us and acknowledge the weight of history that is behind all of us each and every day? I want to thank all of our guests, Logic Allah and Andar Ma'at. He is, and also D.L. Grant, the manager of the George Washington Carver Branch Library. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.